All right, well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group call on Monday, June 3rd at 2019. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Zoom room. If you're only on the audio bridge at this time, please let yourself be known now. Okay, hearing no names, I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to Jeff Newman. You can begin, Jeff.
Thank you, Julie. All right, welcome everyone, and good to see we've got about a little over 20 participants, so that's good. We are going to just, like the other calls, we're going to get into the next part of the agenda. And if anyone's got their phone that's not on mute, if you could put it on mute, if you're not speaking, that'll be great. But let me ask before we get into the meat of the part of the agenda, if anyone has any amendments to their statement of interest. Okay, not hearing any. Again, if we can mute the lines there. I see someone with a 613 number. Maybe we'll put that on mute. That'd be great. Okay, so the two topics planned for today are to go into the continue with the pre-approval, the Registry Services Provider pre-approval program, and then getting into a conversation on the global public interest, which will be a narrowly defined subject, although the term global public interest is quite broad and could lead us down many paths that I am hoping we don't necessarily take. Because with respect to new GTLDs, there's only certain things that we've actually looked at or should be looking at. Before I go on, let me just ask that someone is joined with the phone number ending in 998. If that person could identify themselves, that would be great. Okay, well, they put themselves on mute, so that's good. Okay, so we'll try to find out. Oh, that was Olga. Or no, maybe not. Anyway, so if we go right now to view the, I think the only option at this point is to view Julie's screen. Is that right? There we go. Okay, Steve's screen is coming up. This is where we left off on the Registry Services Pre-Approval Program, formerly called or Accreditation of Service Providers. We're now calling it Pre-Approval Program, and so we discussed that on the last call. So we left off on really just going, if you scroll down on that page, we talked about the high-level agreements. And we had left off finishing, scroll down a little bit more there, talking about on the outstanding items. So the first outstanding item I think we resolved, which is just using the term pre-approval. So I think we're good on that. Also on mute, please. Okay, I think we resolved that. Good. We are now on the general considerations for the program. Sorry, did anyone have their hand raised? Did I miss anything? Nope. Okay. So the first item for consideration came from the GAC, and it was a comment that they had made that said that the pre-approval program should consider security threats and use tools such as DAR to identify potential security risks for an application. I put my own question in there simply because I understand that the comment to mean essentially that if there's any security threats, we probably should not pre-approve that application. But the connection between DAR was a little confusing to me because DAR looks at current activity that's already going on within a particular string and not, you know, the likelihood of security threats for the future. So it didn't make sense to me to use DAR. But I don't know if there's anyone on this call that might have any insight into that, or is that just a general comment really just to make sure that any RSP, registry services provider that's pre-approved, should security should continue to be a criteria as it is for currently for all applications for new TLDs. So Jim is saying in the chat that, sorry, just jumped on me here. Let me go back. Wow, it really just jumped on me there. Jim says, wonder if it relates to future applications by current operators. It's possible, but that, as Donna says, it's a registry operator issue rather than an RSP issue. In some instances, the registry service provider may be the same, but that's not always the case, in a lot of cases, it's not always the same. So I think, unless there's some additional insight, oh, Cavus has his hand raised. Cavus, please.
Problem with this text from GAC, but I'm not aware who have drafted that and how it came to you. We have always this problem. Text coming from GAC to you, to board, and so on and so forth. When they ask questions, no one is going to answer. So I think the author of this, whoever might be, I don't want to guess. I know who is that, but should attend the call and reply to the questions. Once again, the question is valid, but the inquiry that you have made or question you have made, I am not in a position to reply to that. So you may ask that whether anyone else in the call from the GAC, apart from me, I don't see the list of participants, who else is there and whether that person is aware of that. Usually Jorge is attending and I don't know who else. So could you kindly or secretariat tell me kindly who else from the GAC attending and whether he would be in a position to reply to your legitimate questions while we don't disagree with the concept proposed to us, but we want to have clarification. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Caboose. I don't believe I see anyone from the GAC on this list that's here, so I think your proposal...
We've got Canada. Canada's here, for example, at Cheryl for the record. But if we're going to ask a clarifying question, then that can go to the GAC secretariat and GAC can deal with it in a proper manner. We're not, this question, as I understood it, Jeff, was for us to discuss. And then if we are in agreement, we can make it a clarifying question. And Jim has certainly suggested that it might be a valid clarifying question. I'm assuming Cavus would support that. So if it is a clarifying question, then our staff reach out to the staff that support GAC and we ask that question and they'll deal with it formally. So I think that's, from my perspective at least, a smart way forward. But yes, you do have other people from the GAC world here. And Cavus, I'm hopeful that Julie or someone from staff can work with you to help you get the participants pod up so you can see who is in the room as well. Thank you.
Oh, thanks. Sorry, I had to unmute myself here. Thanks, Cheryl. I think that's helpful, and I do agree with you and with Jim on let's get a clarifying question on there. to see if it's if there was something specifically in mind with Dar that was that triggered the comment. The registrars on the next comment had made a statement which they made similarly to the technical in the technical evaluation section, which is much later in the comments or in the topics, which is essentially that they should take into consideration interoperability with ICANN accredited registrars, and there should be additional standardization of certain operational requirements. So I, during the GDD summit in Bangkok a few weeks ago, I wanted to get some clarification from the registrars on this comment to see if there was some more explanation of, you know, first whether it just referred to this program or whether it was a general comment. And what I got back from the registrars, from the drafters of the comment, as well as those it present, was that it really was intended for general technical evaluation, no matter when it's done, whether part of pre-approval or and or part of the regular application period. And it was the hopes that certain functions could be standardized amongst open top-level domains. Things, very minute details in a number of cases, or I should say minute, very, because that makes it seem small, but very specific details with respect to certain functions like billing, maintenance notices, other types of very specialized technical features that are not standardized currently. They were hoping that a group that's set up right now that discusses some of these interoperability issues could be discussed by that, what's called the registrations operations group within the contracted parties house, to just start the conversations there. To the extent that anything ends up, any recommendations, they would obviously put that out for comment and go through a process. But this really was not intended just for the RSP pre-approval program, but was in a general comment towards the evaluation process. So long of the short is that there's nothing specifically from this comment that would apply to the pre-approval program that we would need to discuss at the moment. Any questions on that? Okay, there's still some discussion about DAR, so I think it's being answered on the chat, which is great. So I'll move on unless someone wants to ask a question. Okay, then the next comment we got was from the non-commercial stakeholder group. This was an idea that states that the pre-approval program should be clear and transparent. Support, the NCSG supports cataloging receipts of, I think what they meant is complaints or, not receipts, but basically complaints or violations, SLA violations or compliance actions against RSPs, any investigations and responses taken to those complaints, and a process for rejecting approved RSPs. So if someone has been pre-approved, it was an idea of how to, of consequences that may justify removing an RSP from the pre-approval list. This, I don't know, does anyone have any thoughts on this new idea? Currently, right now, there's no kind of cataloging of actions or complaints against RSPs. In fact, there's not even a cataloging of complaints against registry operators, to my knowledge, unless that results in a compliance action, which ultimately results in a breach. So this is something that doesn't really apply at this point. Well, Jim says there may be cataloging by the ICANN, but they're not made public. Fair enough, right? Sure, there's cataloging from the person who files it, there's, I'm sure, cataloging by the registry for which it's filed against. But there's no public cataloging of it. So I think this is kind of a broader subject. Also, generally, compliance actions are, and the comment I put in there, is that their compliance actions are against a registry operator. They're not against RSPs, at least up until this point. Paul says, would a public complaint log be helpful? Not all complaints have a basis. Paul, I think that's certainly true. Does anyone want to discuss this issue further? So again, this is a new idea presented by the non-commercial stakeholder group, but is there appetite within this group to discuss this comment further?
Jeff, it's Donna. I have my hand up.
And so does Kathy.
Ah, good. Yes, sorry, I didn't scroll up. Yes, Donna then Kathy. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. Donna Austin from Newstart. So one of my reservations with this is that, RSPs are third-party providers to, the registry operator. They don't have a contract with ICANN. So I don't see how you could have a publicly catalogued list of that's being suggested by the NCSG. If there's an RSP that is a new entrant and they don't meet the standards that's identified within the pre-approval process and they don't go any further, I guess there is a possibility that they could tout for business, even though they haven't met the requirements of the pre-approval process. So a registry operator could submit an application with somebody listed as an RSP, but they would, if they haven't been approved through the pre-approval process, they are still going to have to go through the application process proper anyway. So I'm not sure that there's any value in what's being suggested here. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Donna. Kathy, please.
Coming off mute. Can you hear me, Jeff?
Yep, thanks.
Okay. Great. Hi, everybody. Kathy Kleiman. So this seems to be kind of the most natural thing in the world, that if we're going to have an RSP approval, pre-approval process, we have to have the flip side, which is to let people know if something is no longer approved or likely to no longer be approved. What we're talking about here is a set, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, a set of advantages that you get for being on the RSP pre-approval list, including we're going to reduce evaluation and testing. These are really companies holding themselves out, including to the community and to the global south, as being reliable backends. And if that's not the case, we should know. So once we put them on the list, it doesn't mean that they're there forever. There has to be a process for taking them off and for knowing that something is being taken off. So let's say you have an RSP, let's talk about how does one de-approve an RSP, especially let's say, the RSP is serving a lot of registries. And then how do you let the community know? Let's say it's just a few weeks before applications are due in a new round. How would the community know, especially those who are in the process of contracting with an RSP, know that for whatever reason, ICANN has determined that they no longer meet the requirements of the approval process? Thanks, Jeff. I think we have to kind of answer the question because it's not enough just to be approved. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. So I want to take your comment and divide it into two discrete issues, although maybe it's more than that. But the first issue is on the public cataloging of complaints. I'm going to put that one to the side right now, because I think the second issue is, once you're on a pre-approved list, is there a way to get off of, or is there a way to be removed from that list for, whatever activities, and we can go into that later. And if so, how is that communicated? I think if we can remove the first part of the question, which is the public cataloging of complaints, and really make it just about, which I don't hear that there's a huge amount of support to go into, But then focus on that second question of should there be, and this is an outstanding question a little bit later on anyway, should there be a mechanism for the removal of a pre-approved registry, and then what is the impact of that? The first thing I would just note, and I see Paul in the queue, is that, of course, if someone does something to violate their SLAs, then, as Donna said, because there are registry operators that are under contract or will be presumably under contract. Please mute phone there. If there are RSPs that are pre-approved that are serving registries, chances are there's going to be compliance actions anyway, and we're talking about something very different than being on the pre-approved list, although it could be related. So the question really then is, if someone's on the pre-approved list but for whatever reason does something to become removed, then how are they removed from the list and how is that communicated? So let me go to Paul, please.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, terrific. Okay. So I guess my concern is that if we're going to talk about a mechanism to get somebody off the pre-approved list, that we draw a little box around that first. And specifically, I have a lot of concern about the idea of someone coming off the pre-approved list and that working some sort of cancellation of their ability to function within the ICANN environment, essentially opening up a back-end provider to central attack to undo contracts, which could have effects not only on in relationship to whichever registry whomever is complaining is worried about, but for other registries that rely on that back-end provider. So Jeff, I mirror your language that we need to understand what's the point of the unapproval process. What's the impact? How far do people intend to take such a thing? It's maybe instead of an approval or disapproval, there's some other mechanism, 3 stars, 5 stars, I don't know. But the idea of central attack, which could affect dozens of registries that are otherwise unrelated or uninvolved in whatever the kerfuffle is, that to me seems pretty scary. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. So I think, let me get Cavus and then I'll propose a potential way forward. So Cavus, please.
Yes, Jeff. I have two options to deal with all of these questions or comments. First option, when the question either is not clear or we don't know how to implement that, that means the implementation way or guideline how to implement that is not given, we ask clarification of the author of the question. This is option one. Option two, should you not like to take that path, the group, that means we, indicate that our understanding of the question is this, and based on that, we comment and conclude on that. For instance, you said part of the question cannot be implemented, is not valid, not saying that it's not implementable, and the other part could be done provided that we drop public catalog and so on and so forth. So these are the two options, Jeff, for all the questions now and in future. Because if you want to spend time that there is no one from the authoring, the author of the question to describe what they mean by that, we spend time to give our interpretation. So can you kindly opt for one of the options? The first option, as I mentioned, we say that we need clarification and we park the question. The second option, we give our understanding of the question and the way that could be implemented, and then we comment on that. Could you kindly consider this, any of these two approach? Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Cavus. Without getting too much into that, I think with the GAC comment, that was one that we're seeking clarification. I think with this one, we understand the comment. So it's not a question of interpretation. It's separating out two concepts that are derived from the comment. The first one being on a removal, pre-approval removal. I did not mean to make that rhyme. And the second one is on a public and cataloging of actions against RSPs. I'm putting that first one aside for the moment to focus on the second one. And I think Donna sort of posted, I think that's kind of where I was sort of going with this, is that the only thing that pre-approval gets an applicant or even the RSP is that that they don't have to be reviewed during the application period. So if a pre-approval is removed or someone no longer is pre-approved, the only real impact would be that they would need to be evaluated during the application process. It would not extend or should not extend into the compliance or anything like that, because as Donna said, if there's some sort of violation of a registry services provider and it causes an existing registry operator to breach its SLAs or to breach the agreement in some sort of way, there are consequences for that. So I think what we're really talking about here is if someone is removed from the pre-approval list, the only impact would be, or two impacts. One is they're not included on the list. And number two is that it would not be an automatic approval once, if an applicant applies using them as the back end, it would result in the back end having to be approved with the application. Those are the real impacts of it. Anything else I think is beyond the scope of this program. So I think Donna and I are kind of saying the same thing. I think, Donna, let me know if I am misstating that in some way. Greg and then Kathy.
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. Jeff, that was a very helpful intervention by you and really kind of went to a lot of what I was thinking about, which is that I think we're thinking about far too much in terms of this program. This is not something where all of a sudden these are gonna be constantly monitored and basically become like some sort of quasi-contracted party with ICANN. The pre-approval is limited. It's basically meant to avoid the wasting of time in the application process. And the idea that there's going to be, you know, some sort of compliance and then that there would be some sort of consequences if you fell off the pre-approval list. I think, as you said, once the application's already gone through, you wouldn't, at some point, the fact that you've been unpre-approved would be irrelevant. And irrelevant to your continuing offering of services to your customers. It would seem to me that, you know, it would not be that powerful. This is not about an approval to be like an approved vendor, and that if you fall off the list, you can no longer be an RSP. It's really just to skip a step in the application process because you've already been through that step often enough, or whatever, you know, whatever the threshold would be, that there's no point in doing it again. At most, there might be some sort of checkup to make sure that companies aren't somehow completely falling apart after the in things that would be picked up in the approval process. But I think the idea that this is going to become a sort of consumer's reports, or even worse, some sort of like commission for the governance of RSPs, I think is taking the whole idea way beyond where the idea, I think, you know, should go. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. I think that sounds like, and Donna just posted, she agrees that it's really just, the purpose of this is not, and it goes back to something Kathy said, and then I'll let Kathy weigh in. Kathy said the benefit that we're giving is for the RSP, but actually the benefit we're giving is really for the applicants themselves, so that the applicants, A, don't have to be at risk when they put their application in, and B, they don't have to pay for the technical evaluation of a back-end operator that's already paid for its own evaluation, essentially. So that's really the main justifications if we go back to the beginning as to why we were establishing this. So I think Greg and Donna, your comments are in line with that. I'll go to Kathy, and then I see a question from Justine.
Okay, so this is Kathy. So the RSP is, as you've just said, Jeff, an applicant seal of approval. And so back-end seal of approval. It's coming in from ICANN. There'll be a list. People will know. It will be promoted. It will be marketed. So presumably an RSP can be representing 1,000 or thousands of registry operators. So if an RSP becomes unapproved, and I'd still love to know what that process is, if Donna could shed light on that or anyone else. If an RSP is unapproved, it does, for one registry operator, that should wave a flag for the other registry operators. Now, of course, it should be in the registry operator contracts, but if we have young registry operators, the kind of diversity that we want, they may be relying on this pre-approval list. So what do we do as a minimum if we're taking an RSP off the pre-approval list? You should notify all the registry operators that have used that RSP and relied on that. And there should be, and of course the marketing, I mean, the registry can no longer market that it is pre-approved. We've got to go through some kind of process to take them down if we're going to put them up and people are going to rely on this, the existence of this RSP in this pre-approval process. It's basic. We're not creating a consumer reports, but there's got to be kind of a clear way. If we're going to create it, we have to have a clear way to take them off. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Kathy. I see Greg and Kathy's hands still up. I'm going to assume those are old. I'm going to go to Donna. And then if you're back in the queue, just let me know.
Thanks, Jeff. Donna Austin from Newstart. So Kathy, as it currently stands, I don't think there is such a concept of an unapproved RSP. It's not something that I've heard of. What we have seen in recent times is that, you know, there's some movement within the market about as it relates to RSPs. But while, you know, we had some discussion last week about, you know, statistics that ICANN were providing and the possibility of ever a breaches, that, you know, when we talk about RSPs and maybe, you know, whether they become unapproved or not, that pretty much becomes a business proposition, I think, a commercial business proposition. So I don't know that there is such a concept at the moment. And I don't know how you would actually, you know, as we said, this pre-approval program, all it is it's a, yes, you've answered a number of technical questions and gone through some kind of evaluation to see that what you've had in your, in response to the technical questions, you can actually fulfill that with some kind of, you know, virtual exam. But it doesn't, it's, I don't even know. Jeff's right. It's not a certification of anything. It just means that you've undertaken this test and you qualify, you know, to tout for business, I suppose, in the EGTLD program. But I don't know that it's any kind of certification that somebody could be de-accredited or something like that. So sorry, I got a bit convoluted there at the end, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks, Donna. The only thing I would add is, because Kathy said in her comment just now, it's a certification. And Kathy, it's not a certification. It is just saying that the registry has passed the test at a point in time earlier than when the application period is, so that if someone puts them down as the back-end operator, they don't have to then go through yet another technical evaluation. It's no different than if today, or let's put ourselves back in 2012. In 2012, if a registry services provider through the registry operator, because it would be part of that application, passed the evaluation, nothing would happen later on to that application for the string if the registry services provider breached another agreement or did something that had the evaluators known that bit of information may not have passed the evaluation. There is no process to deal with that except through the pre-delegation testing, going into the root, and then of course after the fact through a compliance process. So what we're saying here is that the only thing this pre-approval program is, the only thing, is that it is saying, check, yes, you've passed the test prior to the application period starting, and therefore if someone picks you, we don't have to do a technical evaluation. That's it, nothing more, nothing less. So I think we really need to just kind of think of it in those terms, and then you can think of the consequences that would naturally flow from that if someone's taken off the list, right? If someone's taken off the list, it doesn't affect the applications that have already gone through. All it affects are future applications which want to use that operator. Thanks. Let me go to Greg, Jamie, Kathy.
Thanks. Greg Chatton for the record again. I think there are some issues here. For instance, how long does a pre-evaluation, and I'm going to call it a pre-evaluation rather than a pre-approval, just because pre-approval seems to excite people too much. Does it last for a year? Does it last for 100 applications? And again, I think it's, as you said, Jeff, this is just with regard to kind of reusing that evaluation so that you don't have to go through the evaluation process again. It seems to me it should not be perpetual because too much can change over that period of time, perpetuity, that is. But that it should last for some period of time, and maybe there should be some sort of a checkup process just so that make sure that essentially you're not assuming too much by not going through the technical evaluation process. But I think the idea that this, you know, is going to be some sort of, you know, is a seal of approval or creates a certification, it's just a matter that of not having to go through kind of the inspection every time. In a way that was, was clearly redundant, essentially, you know, make work, because, you know, maybe there needs to be some sort of change, either some sort of a self-reporting change requirement, that, you know, if there's some, you know, massive change in how you're doing business, then you need to say so. That might void the evaluation, but basically assuming it's business as usual, this should last for a period of time, and then get reevaluated. It lasts again for a period of time, just so you don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. I see Jamie, Kathy, and then there's some points in the chat, so I will cover those, but let me go to Jamie, then Kathy.
Yeah, hi, Jamie Baxter for the record. Just a point of clarification, because I hear one of the benefits being spoken about for the applicant is that they can avoid the cost of going through the evaluation. is there a protection in place for the applicant that avoids them having to pay for that evaluation should the RSP come into problem going into their evaluation? I just want to make sure I understand that, so that if you align, if you're marketed by a backend as somebody who's being who's already pre-approved, which to the applicant says, okay, now I don't have to pay for an evaluation, and then later there becomes a problem, how is the applicant protected, or how is that, how does that play out? If you could just kind of explain that, I'd appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks. I've written down that question. Let me go to Kathy, and then I'll go to the chat ones, and then give some thoughts of what we say in the initial report and potential paths forward. Kathy, please.
Okay. Jeff, I'm going to go ahead and read some of the questions in here. And also, I did want to say pre-approval program is what's been approved. It appears to be the term that we're using. So I think we have to use it. That said, Greg raised some really good issues, as did Jamie. So I'll repeat them. What is the protection for the applicant? And of course, this is going to be marketed. But let me raise. So Jim said, if a pre-approved RSP starts to display performance issues that lead to EBRO triggering events that we spent a lot of time talking about in the last call, should they still be considered pre-approved? That's a really good question. And Anne's question was, does RSP pre-approval apply regardless of the services to be provided in connection with a particular application? Or is the ability to meet the needs related to proposed new services part of the evaluation, even if the RSP is pre-approved? So going back to the protection for the applicant, it seems a simple question. If we are going to create a pre-approval list, how do you take an RSP off the list? How do you provide notice to those who, because they're going to be taken off the list because of some technical or operational problem, right? How do you provide notice to all of the applicants, presumably now registry operators who are using them, and some kind of notice to the public, or how quickly do you get them off the list so that other people don't rely on them for upcoming applications, or know that if they do rely on them, the costs are going to be different. But basically, RSPs, let's think about it, could in the future represent work with thousands of applicants and registry, and then future registry operators. So it seems if we're going to create something that does give them a stamp of approval, we have to provide some kind of communication when they no longer are deserving of it. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. So let's go through these one at a time. So first, on Greg's question of or comment that there should be a term that this should be good for, I think that's a great question. I think that's something we should talk about. That is one of the outstanding issues. So, I'd love to hear thoughts as to whether it's a in-time thing or it's a round thing, or just that would be great to resolve. The notion of what are they approved for? In the initial report, it said that the registry services provider would be pre-approved for the main registry services, which includes, the critical services and each of the things that the evaluation was for. If there are new registry services that are being proposed, then obviously then there would have to be some evaluation at some later point to be, during the application process if a registry wants to propose something new. So it's not pre-approving for everything, it's just pre-approving for the basic core functions of the registry. That was what's in the initial report. In terms of the applicant, again, this is up for group discussion. One of the solutions could be that if the applicant picked a registry services provider that was subsequently taken off the list, but prior to their application being reviewed, then we could set a rule that says that the applicant could have a period of time in which to pick another pre-approved operator or could then have the backend operator resubmit the an action for approval at that point in time with the application. It could be a choice of things to do. Jim's question on the Ebro goes to the notion of what does it take to get someone off the list? And that's, again, a topic that we should be coming to some conclusion on, but we have not yet. So those are kind of the thoughts I have. Do people, let me scroll down in the chat because I'm still up at the top here. Let's see, we have, okay, I've read the comments. The registry operator would have to do some due diligence again, but I think we can solve that protection for the applicant by saying if for whatever reason they were removed from the list, perhaps offering the applicant an opportunity to change out providers within a period of time might help. Sarah says, oops, I got backwards. Okay. Jeff, are you suggesting that RSPs who are pre-accredited, it's pre-approved, are prohibited from pricing their own services? No, I don't think I said that. If I did, I didn't mean to. But I'd be curious as to why that was a question or what I said that made you think of that. It was not intended. Let's see. Okay, Jamie agrees with the proposed protection to the applicant. Okay, did I miss anything from the list? Donna, please.
Thanks, Jeff. Donna Elston from Newstar. So I'm a little bit concerned about this concept of removing someone from pre-approval because I'm not sure what process that would have to go through. And I think it comes back to what Greg might have been saying about the timing. So I think, does it make sense that, you know, the pre-approval holds until the completion of the application and the evaluation process? And then from then on, the registry operator is responsible for meeting the technical requirements. So I think we need to put a timeline or a timing around this pre-approval. And it only holds until the, you know, the application and evaluation process is complete. Because I don't see how you can take away a pre-approval once TLDs are delegated. I really don't know how that works. So I think if we can put a time frame around it, or at least identify the point where the pre-approval is no longer an issue, that might be helpful. But I don't, because I really don't see how you remove pre-approval, because I just see this process as a yes or no thing. And if we go back to Greg's earlier intervention and think about what the purpose of this approval was supposed to be, then I think that's important to the conversation too.
Yeah, thanks, Donna. So, I mean, that those are the two options, right? You can. Well, there might be more than two, but the two options I think we should think about are your question or your intervention, which is, you know, are you on there for a period of time or for the round, let's say, and that's it. Everything else is taken care of at a later point in time, or should there be a process for removing someone from the list? I don't think we've come up with any definitive answer to that question, or certainly nothing that the whole group has agreed upon. So let me go to Jim and see if I could sum up some of this.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. This is Jim. Just following on Donna's previous intervention, I guess the question that stands out in my mind is, yeah, I can see the pre-approval lasting for quote unquote a round. But, you know, this group has talked for a long time about possibly moving to a steady state period where you apply for a for a TLD, similar to how you apply for a registrar accreditation. So we do need to be thinking about, if you're on that list, how do you actually take somebody off because of some failures that do occur? I don't think, wants to be in the position of saying somebody's pre-approved when they know full well that there are either compliance issues or there are performance issues. So there needs to be some sort of mechanism that addresses that going forward. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. So let me see if I could summarize where I think we are. And then please weigh in if I'm not stating this correctly. So we seem to have agreement within the group that there should be a pre-approval process and that it should be called a pre-approval process as opposed to any kind of accreditation or certification or anything like that. We seem to have agreement that if an applicant applies for a string and they agree to use a pre-approved registry services provider, and let's assume right now that the RSP is still on the list at the time the application is evaluated, that the applicant then would not have to have a technical evaluation for the core registry services for which our RSP has been pre-approved. We seem to have agreement that if the registry proposes any services that are beyond what has been pre-approved, that there will have to be a technical security, et cetera, evaluation of those additional services. We seem to have an agreement that if a registry service provider, we don't quite yet have agreement that there should be a way to remove someone from the pre-approval list, but it sounds like there's agreement that a registry services provider should only be pre-approved for a fixed period of time and then should have some process to either be pre-approved or some sort of check-in, I think, as Greg said. There seems to be some sort of support that if a registry services provider is removed from the pre-approval list because there is a pre-approval process, a removal process, that an applicant shouldn't be punished for that removal and that the applicant should be afforded an opportunity to pick another pre-approved RSP or to propose its own. So it seems like we have agreement on a number of things. Now, what we still need to talk about is how long should that period of time be that they should be pre-approved for. We should be discussing then what if anything should be a triggering event to remove them from the pre-approved list. And I think those are the two main ones from this discussion. But let me go to Martin and Jim.
Thanks, Jeff. It's Martin here. Thinking about whether or not an RSP is on a pre-approved list or not, I think the process would be very similar in terms of those where there were subsequent failings determined. So, and I'm thinking this from the registry operator's point of view. If they've chosen somebody that's on a pre-approved list, they'll be monitoring anyway for any prior delegated registry operators that use the same RSP. So if anything suddenly starts to stand out as a problem, they will be very cautious then to think about changing. Similarly, if they're not on a pre-approved list, they'll still be monitoring for anybody else that's going prior to them through the delegation process. And if things fail, they'll be quick to respond and think about changing to an alternative. So I do think that we're trying to build in too many complications on what this should be, which is a simple matter of, at a point in time, this registry service provider has qualified against a set criteria or set standard of questions that have been evaluated, And will, you know, if we determine a period that it will last for, you know, it stands for this period of time. But, you know, there will still be that due diligence required, that monitoring by the registry operator to make sure that that is continuing. And if things do fail, is it the point of the is it the problem that the evaluation wasn't appropriate enough and needs to be amended? Or is it something different that's occurred in the process that wouldn't have been picked up through the evaluation process to begin with? Either way, something can be worked back into the future evaluation process. So I think there's going to be some learning mechanisms in there. We can build in some process, some periods where it would last for, but let's try not to overcomplicate it. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Martin. Jim.
Yep, thanks, Jeff. So I would add probably one more sort of, I think there's agreement on, and that was, we had a discussion about this last week on the call, and then we moved it to the list about the need for more information from ICANN, specifically related to the Ebro triggering incidents, the data that I referenced and others have talked about in the past. Was only current through some point in 2017. So there's a 2-year gap since then. So I think Steve and others had suggested that it'd be good to, and myself suggested it'd be good to try and get a refresh on that data from ICANN. And then Donna had, I think we had raised also in the email chat that during the GDD summit that Christine Ouellette had referenced that there were some issues, significant issues that she had raised about folks not being able to pass or having issues with the pre-delegation testing, which I think caught a lot of us by surprise. So just getting a little more clarity and information from Christine around the extent of those issues and what they were related to, I think might be helpful as part of these ongoing discussions. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Jim, and thanks for bringing that up. I think, yes, so we need to see if we can get a refresh of that data, and I think that that data, along with Christine's comments and others, I think are very relevant to the whole notion of what's in the technical evaluation, regardless of whether it's done pre-application period or done during the application period. I think that... the notion of the same, what we talked about last week, which seemed agreement to, is that the evaluation that occurs during the pre-approval period should be the same evaluation that is done during the regular approval period. And so I think that that's a general discussion that's equally applicable to both of those time periods. So yes, thanks for the reminder on the action item. I'll make sure we follow up on it this week to see if we can get some more data on that. Donna, please.
Thanks, Jeff. Donna Austin from Newstar. So I'm starting to get really concerned that we're actually going back down the path of accreditation, which is something that we took pains to avoid, when we first started talking about this. This might be pedantic, but I think Martin picked up on this. So this was just, and Greg as well, this was supposed to provide some efficiencies to the evaluation process. I don't think it was ever intended that there would be a published list of pre-approved RSPs. It was simply that, you would, if somebody was looking to be an RSP, they could undertake the requisite, respond to the technical questions to the evaluation, and then they meet the criteria that is likely to come back in the application itself. So I'm concerned that if we're talking about this and D, removing approval, then we're talking about accreditation again. And if that's the case, then I have serious concerns about where this conversation is headed. Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, thanks, Donna. I think I was with you for most of your comment up until the end about lists. I think it was always intended to have ICANN published a list of those that had passed the pre-approval, because otherwise, how would applicants know whether someone was pre-approved or not? But everything else you said about it's never meant to be accreditation, I think that's 100% in line with what was said in the initial report. The only difference, I think, was the concept of it being known to applicants whether an entity was pre-approved or not. So I don't know if you want to jump in with another comment on that. Is it really the list that was the problem, or more everything else tied around it?
So thanks, Jeff. I don't think I had a problem with the list until we started talking about how to take people off the list, because the intention of the list now, if we're talking about how to take people off it, is that it has some kind of greater value than was originally intended. So I really do have concerns that we are going down the path of providing, you know, we're going back to the accreditation discussion, which we spent a lot of time being careful about our language and sensitive to what that means. RSPs do not have a contractual relationship with ICANN. So ICANN really, you know, is limited in what it can do in respect to any sanctions on that part. So I'm just very nervous that we're getting back into accreditation discussion.
Okay, thanks, Donna. I think if it were one round and all we said is we're going to do one round and you're pre-approved for that round and then that's it, and everything, you know, you pack your bags and go home and that's it, that would be one thing. I think the fact that when you throw in a steady state of having multiple rounds, you know, and especially being at a, you know, then the question is, do you need to be pre-approved before each round, or can we make it a time period, regardless of when the rounds occur, in which case then, you know, entities may be no longer on the list. I won't even say removed, but no longer on the list. If you say you're pre-approved, like Greg says in his comments, you're pre-approved because the technical evaluation passed, you know, X months ago. Although I would ask people to really think about the time period, because ICANN took how many years to, you know, do the technical evaluations the last time. So we need to balance that out. But at the end of the day, because we're going to have because the proposal or what we've been discussing at rounds is a steady state, we need to have ways of either making everyone do it all over again prior to the start of each round, or having a fixed time period in which they need to then have another opportunity to start a list completely over again, or whatever it is. And so that's something that we need to have a process for. But I don't think we're getting into the realm of making it an accreditation simply because we have to take into consideration multiple rounds as opposed to just one. Let me go to Jim and Jamie, and then Martin, I see his comment on the chat. Jamie, are you there?
Oh yeah, this is Jamie. Sorry, I was waiting for Jim. Jamie Baxter for the record. I agree with Donna, and it's important to reiterate that this discussion started because of looking for efficiencies and cost savings. But as the conversation evolves, it turns, from my perspective anyway, it turns into a marketing opportunity for those who are on the list. And, you know, your concerns, I think, resonate, Jeff, that if this is done once, that makes sense. But, you know, just like graduating from medical school, you don't just graduate once and then you can practice without having to take some refresher course along the way as medicine changes. So I don't know what the solution is, but it's part of the reason why I raise my voice for those who need the protection from this, because it could be used as a marketing tool to attract or to keep others out of the market in a way that we may not even realize yet. So having to maintain or to reevaluate or whatever it is certainly seems like a much fairer method going forward. But let's not fool ourselves and not think that this is in fact a marketing tool for RSPs going forward. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Jamie. No doubt it can be used as a marketing tool, but it could also be used as a tool for new entrants to get into the market and to let applicants know that they have passed the pre-approval, which is something applicants didn't necessarily know prior to the 2012 round. I mean, they made assumptions that existing ones would likely be approved going forward, but none of them ever knew for certain that their chosen backend RSP would have been approved, right? So let me go to a couple questions from the chat. Steady state and is not defined as first come, first serve. Steady state is just that. It's a state in which there are applications either in Windows or in some process by which they're not periods of indeterminate gaps in between. It's a steady state where the program runs on its own and it doesn't need, except for when the GNSO and others want to intervene to change things through whatever processes they have now. But it's not a start, stop, wait 10 years, start, stop, right? It's a steady state, whatever that is in the future. But that's not first come, first, not necessarily first come, first serve. It can be, but that's not what the group has decided. Okay, I think we've actually covered a lot of the aspects. We'll obviously have to do some more work on this, but I think we're probably closer to agreement than we are not. There's a couple fundamental things we need to work through. And as Martin says in his comment, there are certainly in the 2012 round, there are entities that passed evaluation years before the TLDs were delegated for a whole host of reasons. And that registry was not reevaluated, although it did have to go through a pre-delegation testing. So that's something that we need to think about for all applications, not just those for pre-approval, but for all of them as to the timing of when pre-delegation testing is done. Okay. Kathy, you're asking some of the same questions that I think we have started to answer. What do we do with applicants who lose their RSP? I've made a suggestion out there. We'll see if people agree with that or not. Ann asks, when did the full working group achieve consensus on steady state? I think, Ann, I was saying that we haven't. I was just saying that it is not necessarily first come, first serve. I hope that point is clear. I did not say that we achieved consensus on any kind of what that steady state would be. Okay. Going to the other considerations, let's go down. I think the big issue that would need to be figured out now is really if we did this pre-approval program, how long should it be, and when, how far in advance does it need to be done, completed, etc. And for this one, we're all over the map on this one, really, right? Some comments said, 3-4 months, other comments said 6 months, and other comments said a year. So, you know, anything we select, we need to recognize whether it's any of those numbers is at some point, you know, it's semi-arbitrary, right? Well, so what I think we need to do is we need to set down the principles, perhaps without setting a particular time. And so I think the concerns that we have, right, are, I would think, is that any process that we do should be and should give enough time for potential applicants to use the results of a pre-approval program in their decision-making of if and when to apply for a string. Does that sound like a good first principle that we can get agreement on? Thoughts? Yes? No? I'm assuming it sounds like a pretty logical one. Okay, I'm going to assume that because it's so logical. Donna, to restate. So the principle here is that without going into a particular length of time, the principle should be that the results of a pre-approval program should be able to be used by potential applicants in making their decision of if and when to apply for a new GTLD application string. So it's pretty, unfortunately, again, I can't write and talk at the same time. So hopefully someone could write that down. Another principle, the period of pre-approval status is from Anne. Period of pre-approval status should not be overly long. And are you referring to how long a pre-approval lasts? Or I'm talking about the time in which the results of a pre-approval process are and when the application period would start. Cheryl says my initial statement was clearer than the restatement. See, that's why we have transcripts, hopefully. We may not even have transcripts of this. I don't think we do. The principle essentially is that applicants should be able to be aware of the results of a pre-approval program and the time, and they should have sufficient time to make the important application decisions of how and when or if to apply for a new GTLD string. Whether that's 3 months, 6 months, 4 months, a year, the principle is, or the reason we're putting a time frame in there is so that to give applicants notice of who's on the list. So, I mean, again, all of this discussion can go on email. I'm just looking for feedback. So we have Donna, Greg, and Trang. Donna.
Thanks, Jeff. Donna Austin from Newstar. So I don't think that proposal is consistent with the OASG comment that, you know, the establishment of the program should not be a prerequisite to, in the next application window. So, we support the pre-approval program, but setting that up shouldn't get in the way of kicking off the program itself. So, and the next round itself. So I think what you're suggesting is inconsistent with that.
Okay. Thanks, Donna. It very well could be inconsistent. Doesn't necessarily have to be inconsistent because you can always say that for the first round, it's not a condition, but for subsequent ones, it would be. But I totally understand, and absolutely, it's something that should be discussed. So Greg and then Trang.
Thanks, Greg Shatton for the record. I think we heard three different restatements of what was intended to be the first principle. I don't think they were consistent with each other. I think the issue of publicity, if you will, of being pre-evaluated is probably being over. is being valued too much. It would seem to me that a applicant or an RSP could promote itself as having passed 150 evaluations in the first round, or having passed 20 evaluations already this round, and have, you know, the same result. And indeed, one could say that this levels the playing field, because a new entrant can come in and get pre-evaluated, and not even if they did no work in the first round, but if they passed the evaluation, then they would be on an even playing field, at least with regard to evaluation, not necessarily with regard to the other things that buyers of these services would be concerned about. But at least with regard to, you know, having the pre-evaluation status. So rather than this being a bar to new entrants, I think it's actually something that assists with new entry, and actually may help find more competition for incumbents. And that, of course, assumes that a new entrant can come in and actually pass the evaluation. But of course, we're assuming that regardless of whether we have pre-evaluation or not. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. I mean, I had always been thinking of the program as the latter, to be helpful for new entrants to enter the market, not as something that we would want to use to hinder that at all. Just reading Kathy's restatement, that's not my restatement. That's not the policy or not the principle. It's, I'm trying to do this on the fly. Applicants should know of who's on the pre-approval list prior to the time in which they file the application. It's not about changes of results, and it's not about changing RSPs. It's just applicants should be given some period of time to be made aware of the results of a pre-approval program prior to them filing applications in an ideal situation. And Steve is trying to capture it. So let me read from that. Results of a pre-approval program should be able to be used by potential applicants with an adequate amount of time to determine if they want, if they wish to apply for a GTLD with a particular, it should say after that, with a particular pre-approved provider or something like that. But yeah, that's essentially captures it. Thank you, Steve. Reading Paul's comment. Any pre-approval program needs to be less hassle than it's worth, or else no one will bother and just rely on being able to tell folks that they were successful in the 2012 round. Thanks, Polly. I agree that if we make it a more of a burden, then we have not succeeded in certainly some of our high-level principles. And Paul says we need to keep it simple. Yes, so we're trying to. Trang and then Kathy. Trang, please.
Thank you, Jeff. I just wanted to remind the PDP working group that in the 2012 round, there were several applicants that submitted changes to their RSP throughout the evaluation process, but also during contracting time as well. So to the extent that you would like to, to the extent that the PDP working group does not want to place any limitations or rules against applicants being able to change the RSPs during the application evaluation as well as contracting process, it may make sense for the list of the pre-approved RSPs be available, for the entire round. But that's just wanted to flag that for consideration. The other question that I also have a question, which is, as it relates to pre-delegation testing. It sounds like the conversation thus far is about the RSP pre-approval program is limited to the technical evaluation aspect only. And I wonder if that's intentional or if there are any intentions on extending the RSP pre-approval to also include pre-delegation testing. Thank you.
Thanks, Trang. So I'm going to reserve that latter question for when we talk about the technical evaluation in general, because I think that question applies both to a pre-approval process as well as to the regular approval process and what the approval process entails. So I don't think what, according to our high-level principle way or policy way above, is that we are not going to, the goal is to not treat the registries that get evaluated in the pre-approval process differently than those that get approved during the regular process and vice versa. So let me just, we'll punt that question if we could. Let me go to Kathy and then I'll go to Donna, and there's a couple comments in the chat.
Thanks, Jeff. It's Kathy. Really good discussion. I appreciate it. And lots of good questions coming up in the chat. Not mine, but so I just wanted to refer you to them. So I think you've defined what applicants will see as they go into the round. And yes, absolutely, I agree with you on your statement that a period of time, the longer the better, 6 months more, should be around for applicants to know who's on the pre-approved RSP list. But similarly, Jamie brought it up, and we do need to move on it, I think, and include it in our agreement that if an RSP, for whatever reason, is no longer approved, if they encounter technical problems, which is what they're there for, right? They're there to provide technical services. If they encounter technical problems and ICANN does not keep them on the pre-approved list, that the applicant should have an opportunity and the ability and the time to change RSPs if they choose. I don't hear too much agreement on the disagreement on that. Thanks, Jeff. But it's a critical protection for the applicants.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. And at this point, and I just put it in the chat too, because there's no agreement on 3, 4, 6 a year, I want us to nail down a principle, and then once we're all agreed on the principle, we can then, figure out a way to determine what the time frame would be. But without agreeing on a principle, it's just all kind of shots in the dark of time periods, which is what happened, you know, with the comments that we got back. It was just all over the place, which I completely understand why that is. So going back then to the comments, and I know we're getting close to time here. It says, Greg says, wouldn't every RSP become pre-approved after their first evaluation? And Greg, yeah, sort of, I put in there, because of the notion of then you get into real difficult questions of, well, who bears the burden of paying for the first evaluation, which application is it attached to, is it just luck of the draw? Again, if you just wait until all the applications are submitted to approve once, then you're not helping the principle that we established, which is that applicants should be aware when they pick an RSP or when they elect to apply using an RSP, that RSP has passed their testing. So that's why I kind of said sort of to your question. Let's see, maybe Anne says we can ask for public comment on the time or duration, and we did, and that's why we got comments all over the place. 3, 4, 6 a year, it's all in there. And so that's why I'm trying to nail down the principles and then maybe have someone other than making a wild guess, perhaps people can make more educated guesses applying the principles to figure out what that time frame would be. Then, as Trang said, yes, registry operators can change RSPs at any time. I don't think we're proposing changing that at all. Okay. Anne says, then we have to say that the periods that appear in the public comment when we establish the principle. Let's establish the principle and then we can come back to the times. Yes, time periods. Okay, I think still some more comments. Comment from Sarah, I'm not sure ICANN wants to get in the middle of registry operators and agreements they have with independent subcontractors vis-a-vis the RSP pre-approval process. I think that's, I think that could come out as a principle as well. Okay, I think in terms of this subject, before we get to the end, Steve, scroll down, because I believe that most of the other questions all relate to topics that we've all talked about, except for the number of TLDs. I think that is one area we have not yet approached. So we need to get some discussion going on that, whether the number of TLDs needs to be considered or some other factor needs to be considered in terms of the pre-approval process. But I think other than that, Steve, just scroll down a little bit more. We covered the periodic reassessment. And I think we've covered some of the other ones. So we'll go through that and cover those last ones on the next call, but we do need to get into the next several subjects. So be prepared next time to get through some more subjects than this time and also for some good chat online. Are there any other questions before we go until next week? Okay, some good comments still on there on the notion of revocation. All right, thank you everyone, and talk to you all next week.
Thanks, Jeff. Thank you, everyone.